So good morning. Thank you for coming. My name's John Lamb. I work on the Windows team, and I work on the Windows engineering team from Redmond. And we're going to have kind of a fun talk today where we're going to kind of take a big tour across WinRT. We're going to build an app here. We're going to see how we kind of can start from a bunch of things that we know already. And we'll wind up all the way through kind of taking a tour of Visual Studio, some debugging experience, essentially giving you a flavor of the things that you will all need to do to build, you know, these kind of cool apps, right, that you saw certainly over the last few months if you've been following Windows 8, certainly at a minimum this morning at the keynote. Before we start, I thought that I would warm up the audience a little bit, right, by showing you some pictures, right, because it's always fun to see pictures at the start, right, and since I'm keeping you guys from lunch, this is a bit of audience participation, right, so what I'd like you to do is cheer for your favorite thing, right? So I'm going to show you a few pictures, and along the way, we're going to gather some information about the crowd so we'll know what you guys like. So cheers for donuts? Eh? Very American, right? No, not very good. How about, And then how about, there we go, Now we got some food out of the way. Let's go and look at languages. Languages? Not so much, huh? Okay. A little bit of that. Okay. How about this? A little bit more? And then how about this guy? We all like this guy, right? Okay, good. At least it gives me a little bit of more of an impression about what you guys do in the room. So what I want to do is I want to start off this talk by kind of going backwards in time. 3 years ago, We started this process that we've been calling reimagining Windows. Big part of reimagining Windows was obviously a whole bunch of engineering work that we had to do back in Redmond to build the thing that you guys have all seen so far. Another really big part of reimagining Windows is all you guys here, right? You have to go off and build apps, right? In order for Windows to be interesting to customers or businesses, we really need people to go off and build a whole bunch of very interesting and compelling apps. And so when we were sitting, 3 years ago, just kind of rewinding, what did we need to do in order to get, to allow, essentially do as much that we could to make you guys successful at building apps? What we thought was, hey, let's make sure that people could use as much of what they know already in building the apps for Windows 8. So this was a diagram. This is a diagram out of our planning document that we created. We kind of call it the spaceship diagram. And my team is the runtime experience team. My team was responsible for building the thing that we call WinRT today. And really what it is the foundational pieces for all of the new APIs that you're going to be using inside of to build your Metro-style apps. My team also built a lot of the stuff which allowed all of those languages that you see there, the .NET family of languages, C# and VB, JavaScript and C++, to all use the same set of APIs inside of Windows. Right, because the Windows team, we build one set of APIs, right? That's Windows. It's built into the operating system and ships with it. It's nothing that you have to download additionally. Those APIs must be callable from all these other languages, so my team was responsible for building the plumbing in between so that the language guys would say, hey, this is how we define what the contract looks like between the APIs in Windows and the programming language guys, right? So they go off and build that last thing. So as you'll see, you're going to be able to program in what we call a natural and familiar way. So if you're a JavaScript programmer and you're calling one of our APIs, you're going to want to expect, for example, the very first letter inside of the method name to be in lowercase and not in uppercase. But if you're a C# guy, you're going to expect it the other way around, right? Right? So again, right, we did a bunch of things to make sure that it felt natural and familiar in the language that you're used to as well. So that's what my team did, and this is where we started from. We really wanted to make sure that you could leverage as many of your existing skills as possible in building these applications. So that's why we built what we did, and a big part of it is make you guys successful. Kind of think about this, right? It was really all about, you know, trying to get past that. So what did we make? What we made was WinRT, and the way we kind of package up WinRT and we get it to you this thing is we call it the Metro-style SDK. And the Metro-style SDK is essentially the foundation for all the applications that you guys are going to be building. On top of that, there is essentially a set of concepts, right? We wanted to make it very easy for you to create apps on top of Windows 8. We wanted to make sure that the apps weren't just, let's call it a port. You know, our team kind of looks at port as a bad word, right? We want you to reimagine things, right, for Windows 8 instead. And that's really, let's try and leverage and use as many of the underlying features of the operating system as makes sense for the application you're trying to build. Right, so for example, things like accessing the file system for a web application would potentially be a really bad thing, right? You're downloading random untrusted code from the internet. Last thing you want that thing to do is go off and grovel around inside your file system. However, for an application that happens to be written using the same technologies, why not? Right, so we're going to see some examples of that in the application that you're building. And then finally, we want to make sure that you can have high-quality apps. We're going to spend a little bit of time talking about our debugging experience as well inside of this thing. And in particular, something that might not be as familiar to you guys, that's what we call post-mortem debugging. Right? So that is, a crash happens at a customer site, you get a dump file. Right? We're going to plumb the store so you can actually get these crash reports that come back to you with a dump file so that you're going to have some hope of figuring out what happened, right, when the application crashed on the customer machine as well. Right? So we've got a whole bunch of things to make it possible for you to build higher quality applications at the same time. Let's drill a little bit into here and then we'll get out of the PowerPoint stuff. So it's really a couple of things around easily creating apps using what you know, right, the languages thing we talked about. The second thing is using what you have. And what you have could be existing code assets that you have from applications that you've built already. Now, not all of this stuff is just going to magically work and run inside of a Metro-style application. However, with some work, depending on what it is, right, depending how far away you are from where we've kind of set the baseline, we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, what it's going to be like to take existing code assets that you have or that other people have had and then make it work, make it just work inside of your application. Using what you know is a set of languages, but it's not just a set of languages. It's also what I call a set of rendering technologies as well. Right? So you can think about what we have inside of Windows 8 as, hey, we've got the set of languages you can use, and we have a set of rendering technologies. One is obviously HTML and CSS. Second one is XAML, and the third one is DirectX. Right? So depending on the kind of application that you make, what I like people to think about first is, hey, let's think about what your application is supposed to do. If your application is supposed to render rich text that flows with media and other things inside of it, right? HTML is fantastic at doing that. Right? If you're thinking about building a more traditional line of business application with grids and other things, right? XAML is great at doing that as well. In particular, there's a whole bunch of libraries that already exist inside of the XAML ecosystem that make it easier for you to build these applications. Then finally, if you're going off and building a high-performance application, right? Then DirectX and Direct2D is probably the way that you want to think about things as well. Right? So those are kind of key things. Another thing, of course, is the existing libraries of code. Now, we've gone off and we've talked to a lot of developers out there, and a lot of developers today, right, they realize they live in a multi-platform world, right? So they've got existing apps that they've probably written for other platforms, right? So this is why native code is so important in particular, right? Because all those other platforms, most of the people building interesting things, gaming guys in particular, especially on the consumer-focused things, you know, they already have written a lot of game code inside of C. Right, so C being this cross-platform thing, right, is very important to them to allow them to take as much of their existing code from other platforms with minimal amount of additional effort, right, to get that core part of their application running. Right? So that's a very important thing as well. Now, we want to make sure that you use as much of Windows as you can. It's always good to see that it's Andy's birthday today. So a couple of interesting things. We talked a little bit about contracts, right? So we have the standard mechanism inside of Windows today, which makes it very easy for applications to communicate with each other. We've seen things like the sharing contract or the search contract. We're going to see some implementations of this when we go off and we build our application. Another thing is, well, you know, how do I go off and figure out how to do this? We're going to take a look at some of the rich samples that we have inside of the SDK as well. Right? So actually what we're going to do is just copy and paste some code out of an existing sample, and we're going to add search to the application that we're going to be building. Capabilities is another interesting thing. Capabilities is all part of this confidence model, right? So when people go off, when customers go off and say, hey, I'm going to go to the store, I'm going to download an application, what they want to know is that application is not going to mess with their machine, not going to steal their personal data, and a bunch of other things. So you, as the application developer, first have to declare, hey, these are the things that I want to access on your machine. We call those things capabilities, right? A consumer can hopefully read what those capabilities are on the store and say, you know, I wonder why the weather application needs to go off and access my documents, right? That might be something weird, not just for customers, right, but for the person who is reviewing the application on the store. They're going to say, that doesn't really make sense, right? So we're going to reject the application, right, because it really doesn't make sense for weather application to read your documents. So things like that as part of the capabilities that you must explicitly declare inside of your application, all contribute to the confidence model of Windows 8, right? So the customers can say, hey, you know, I have confidence that when I download an application from the store that it's going to be safe, it's going to be high quality, you know, and it's not going to mess with my machine. And then finally, we'll take a look at the APIs. There's an awful lot of APIs that we see here. We're going to take a very quick tour over at least some of them, right, as we're building our application. And then finally, high-quality applications. One of the things that we really sat around and debated a lot on the team is this async model that we have inside of Windows 8. And what async really means is we want to make sure that if your application happens to be fetching a million records from the internet, right, that it's not going to sit there and block and the user sees the little spinning donut thing and the white screen thing, right? That's a terrible user experience. Instead, what we want to make sure is that your app is still responsive while it happens to be doing some kind of computational thing. In order for that to happen, what we do is we essentially force almost every single API. Opening a file, it's async, right? So you say, open file async, and then you're going to have to say, call me back when the file is actually open, right? To, I want to read some stuff from the file. Then you say, hey, call me back, right, when you've actually got the data, right? We don't just sit there and block and wait for something to happen, right? So the UI is always responsive inside of the user applications. It means a little bit more work for you guys, right? But in the end, it winds up being a much better user experience for your customers. We're going to see some of the other things throughout here. We're going to look at the debugging experience. Onboarding to the store is another experience. So there's this thing that we call the Windows Application Certification Kit. So rather than it being some mysterious thing, right? I've got my app. I think I'm done. I'm going to submit it to the store. And then somehow magically it gets rejected. What we're going to do is we're going to allow you to run the same set of static analysis tools that the store guys run when they onboard your application. So you can run them locally on your desktop machine. Make sure, hey, at least it passes on my machine, right, before you go off and submit it up to the store, right? They might reject it for some other reasons, right? But certainly, at the very minimum, you know that you've passed the same set of static analysis tools that they're going to be using on the store. And then finally, we've talked a bit about this trustworthy thing, right? Just making sure that your applications do what they claim they're going to be doing. All right, so that's enough of the slides. I think we can switch out of these things now. We'll come back to it at the end of the talk to kind of summarize. Now, over the next hour or so, I'm going to be building some code for you. One of the things that you're going to get on the I think it's channel 9 is where all of the videos are ultimately going to get posted at the end, is this document. So, you know, don't worry about taking detailed notes inside of here. This is a 50-page document with screenshots and pictures and code fragments and all sorts of other stuff in there. That is exactly everything I talk about in this talk and probably a few things I won't get to inside of this talk as well, right? So you can always go off and read this. You can replicate all of the things that I do. If you want to give another talk inside of your company to other people, feel free to steal this and use it as much as you want. Okay? All right. So let's start. Now let's imagine the app that we're going to build is an HTML text editor, right? So it's kind of fun. It's pretty simple, but it kind of gives us enough of a flavor for what a real Metro-style application can do. So let's kind of take a look at the end first, right, before we come back and build the application. So that's final. Let's go. So let's open this up in Visual Studio, and we'll just go off and run the application first. What the application really does is, here, let's hit F5, and we'll get this guy up and running. It allows you to go off and type HTML into a syntax coloring editor, right? That's the thing over on the left-hand side. There's line numbers and, you know, things that you would expect inside of a text editor. Whatever I type over there, let's say, you know, something simple, you know, something like this, right? You notice there was syntax coloring. I hit Control Enter, right? And it goes off and it renders the HTML that I typed, right? That's really what this thing does. It has some integration with the file system as well. So we can go off and we can click here and say open, right? So I can go navigate to something. I can go to the hello file that I have in my documents. It's going to load the text inside of here. And when I go off and I render it, you know, we get, you know, funny pictures. So it's kind of fun, right? It's a nice little application. It has some support for opening zip files as well. It has support for search, right? So one of the kind of fun things that we can do here is I can click over here on search. We know we've had some internet problems here over the week, so hopefully this will cross our fingers. If I type things, you'll notice here that as I type stuff in search, there's some incremental stuff that's coming here. We're getting search suggestions that are coming back. I'm searching Wikipedia, as it turns out, right? So if I come back here and say, hey, let's go for Windows 8 here, right? I can click over here. And this is going to go out to Wikipedia. It's going to fetch the HTML for the Windows 8 article, and it's going to go off and drop it into the editor over there on the left-hand side, right? So that's what the application does, right? It's, you know, Notepad with some fancy stuff, right? But hopefully this will get your, give you a flavor and a taste for what building a real Metro-style application is going to look like. Okay, so let's shut them down. And let's go back to here. So we're going to start here with just a blank text file. And I'm going to open it up in Notepad 2, right, just random text editor. And I'm going to type really, really fast, right? So check this out. Done. Now, this is probably the simplest possible HTML editor that you could build, right? It's got a text area. It's got this little keyboard binding for the Control-Enter thing, right? And it's going to do stuff, right? So if you were just to set out and write the simplest possible HTML editor that runs in a browser, this is probably what you're going to create. And let's just go run this inside of a web browser. I have Hello World in here. I hit Control Enter and it says Hello World, right? That is the simplest possible piece of code that we can write. Like a lot of things, right? You know, some of the interesting things that we can do here is let's add a little bit more code, right? So there's a little bit of CSS that I just dropped in there, right? So if I add a little bit of CSS, it's probably not going to look quite as ugly as it does there. It looks a little bit better, a little bit closer at least to the application that we're building. Now, we really haven't done anything outside of just use HTML and CSS. What I want to show you next is, you know, all that syntax coloring and line numbers and all that stuff that we saw in the application. Let's go off and build that. But of course, this isn't a talk about building a text editor. And as it turns out, there's a bunch of folks out there in JavaScript land that have been busy building text editors, right? And libraries for text editors. There's a new one every day, literally. So if we go off and we just search for that, right, we can go, you know, here's a library that we're going to look at here. This is the one we actually use. It's called CodeMirror, right? It's entirely written inside of JavaScript. And it really makes it, it's got, you know, syntax coloring for all sorts of different things, CSS, you know, HTML, Java, C#, you name it. So what we'll do is we're just going to take a bunch of files, right, out of this open source project, right? This is code that already exists. We're not going to change it at all. We're just going to copy it into the thing, and then we're going to get this editor thing happening. Okay, so let's see that. So if I come back into here, let's copy some files, right? So, yeah, I've copied files, right? The files that I have are these two here, right? There's two CSS files that we're going to use. And over here, there's an additional 5 JavaScript files, right? So that's the stuff that came from that library. Just copy them into my directory. Now I need to kind of tweak my HTML a little bit so I can reference that stuff and make it work, right? So let's go back to the file here. And I'd say, okay, well, we've got this thing up here. Let's copy some more stuff. So here's my references to my JavaScript, right, that I'm adding inside of there. And here's my references to my CSS. And then I'm also going to add here just some more CSS to kind of make it look the right way, right, on the screen. What's there isn't particularly important. Now, finally, I don't need this text area anymore, right, because as it turns out, it just uses a div, right? So the div is editor, right? So that's how this guy binds. My output guy stays, right, because that's the same thing that was there before. And I don't need this code because this was just my code for just plain HTML without the editor stuff. But if I drop that in there, what I have is the code to initialize CodeMirror. I mean, that's all the code that I need, right? Obviously, for more sophisticated things, you would add more stuff to it, right? But that's all I need there. So you can see there I'm initializing, hey, I want line numbers. I want my tab spacing to be 2. So there's all sorts of options inside of this library. So now that I've got this thing up and running, let's come back to the HTML page, and we'll just hit F5, right, to refresh. And lo and behold, right, we have this thing here, and we can go off and do some fun stuff. Here's a fancier Hello World, right? So we can play some video and some other stuff, right? Because really, this is just an HTML editor, right? It's a live HTML editor that allows me to go off and do things. And we can see some of the fun media things and the video tag and some other stuff that you can do in HTML as well. Right, so that's what we have in essentially building just a web app. Right, this is just a web application. Nothing special about this whatsoever. No Windows 8 stuff in here. Now, as you might imagine, right, this is just running inside of Internet Explorer. Right, so if we just brought up Task Manager quickly inside of here, we can see there's IE there, there's a couple of things there, and there's my app, right, or really my web page running inside of IE. Right, so in the next part of this thing, let's take what we have here, right? This is most of an app, right, kind of, right? And we're going to turn that into a Metro-style application, right? So let's go off and fire up Visual Studio. Let's do a bunch of things to go off and build this and turn this into a real application. So let's go over here. We'll start up the Visual Studio. And the first thing we should do is create a new project, right? So the project will be a JavaScript Metro-style application. It'll be a blank application to start with. And let's just go call this guy editor. And you know the default template's going to go off and run, generate a bunch of files. Let's just hit F5 on this just to see what it does. It comes up. There's a little icon thing, and then this content goes here. Right? So nothing very fancy or spectacular, but this is essentially the minimum bootstrap thing that you need for creating a web application inside of Windows 8. So now that we have that, let's go off and start turning that into something interesting. So we'll bring up Solution Explorer. We'll open up default.html. And you can see inside of here, there's some references to some libraries, some JavaScript files that we have, and some CSS files. Right? So this is just some of the default look and feel and styling for a Metro-style application. So let's add some more stuff. So we'll come in here. And this, if we kind of scroll back up here, you can see here that this is just the same references to the JavaScript files that I had before, right? This is the same references to those two CSS files that I had before, right, inside of my app. Over here, this is essentially the same CSS that made stuff look pretty inside of the app. And then we have this content goes here thing, which we should probably get changed there as well. So we have editor, and we have this script thing. And I also need div id is equal to output, right? So we have my output div inside of here as well, right? So that's the set of things. Again, I'm pretty sure that we've essentially put all of the code back, right, that we had inside of that, just that web page. We've put it into this web page inside of my Metro-style app. Let's go off and run this guy. Oh, before I do that, something is important. You'll notice here that there's a bunch of files that are part of the project, right? So some CSS files and JavaScript files. So even though what I haven't done is I've just put all this stuff in here, I need to copy the files, right, number one. And the second thing is I need to add them to the project, right? So you got to remember to do both things. Okay, so let's do that. We'll come back here. We'll copy some files, right? And then what I'll do now is I'll right-click on CSS. We'll go add some existing items. And you can see there's the files up there, right? So I'll say OK, right? So they're going to be added to my project. And I'll again over here add some existing items over here. We'll go to the JavaScript directory now. That's where I copy those files into. I'll hit Enter over there. And now I think we're in pretty good shape, right? So if I hit F5 now, it's going to build this thing, stick it in here, come up over here. Aha! We've got our editor up and running. Let's say hello world a different way, right? So we've got our application up and running, right? So pretty straightforward, right? We had a web application with a bunch of existing code and some skills that we knew, some CSS and HTML and JavaScript. And now what we've done is we've taken just that existing thing, moved it over to a Metro-style thing, unmodified, right? Go through the notes just to make sure I didn't do anything behind your back, right? But pretty well, there's very little code there. It was unmodified. Just copy the same set of files. And we're now up and running inside of a Metro-style application, right? So it's pretty straightforward and pretty easy to go off and do this. All right. Now let's go off and do something a little bit more sophisticated. Let's add some. Actually, before we go do that, there's one other thing that I wanted to show you when this thing is running. Remember how just before I showed you that, hey, this thing was running inside of iExplore.exe, right? Remember that first web page that we were running? Now what I want to do is I want to show you what this thing is running inside of, right? Because it's running inside of something a little bit different. So I want to go off and bring up Process Explorer. And what Process Explorer is going to let me do is I'm going to go look for, let's go look for Wahost. This goes off and searches, and there, lo and behold, there he is. Oops. Ah. So if you look at Wahost, Wahost.exe is the thing that is running your program. Right? Much like how iExplore.exe was the thing that was running your web page, Wahost is the thing that runs your Metro-style web application. And if we right-click on here and we go to Properties, let's make this a little bit bigger. You can see here that we can look at the command line that was used to launch Wahost.exe. And what you'll see is the interesting thing is the current directory thing. So in the current directory, sqlwag demo editor, that's where I've been writing all my code, bin debug appx. Right? So there's this directory there. And if we go off and we open up that directory, you'll see here that these are just all of the files in my application, right? So there's those CSS files that I had, right? Oops. Here is my JavaScript files that I had in there. It copies all those files. Remember what the project system has to do. That's why you have to add things to the project, right? Is that the project needs to know what files to copy into this directory. When you're running in debug mode, this is what it does. It just copies into a directory, points wahost.exe at that directory, and says go, right? And it goes off and runs your app. If you're packaging this thing up to deploy to your customers, instead you go through a packaging step inside of Visual Studio. We'll see this at the very end of the talk. And what it creates is it creates a file called an appx file. Appx file is just a fancy zip file. Right? It takes that thing in a single file, uploads that thing up to the store. Okay, so that's how you do the distribution part of it as well. Okay? So let's go up what's going on under the covers there. So let's come back to the app. And let's go off and add some, you know, slightly more interesting things here. So let's add a little bit of UI. We'll add a little bit of Metro-style UI to the application. So come back here to default.html. We'll right-click on this guy, and we'll say, hey, let's go off and open this in Blend. Blend is one of the best-kept secrets that we have. And so Blend is a very fancy HTML editor. Right? It has an awful lot of really cool things that will make it much easier for you to kind of visualize the elements that you're using to create your HTML UI for your application. So what you'll see here is, let's go off and scale this guy a little bit here, right? So it fits all. What you see here is he's rendered what the application already looks like, right? So you notice over on the left-hand side, right? You can see, you know, that, well, squint, right? You can see there that it's actually rendered the line number, the whole thing, right? So the application is actually running, right, inside of the app. So it's rendered what the HTML actually looks like if it were running. So what we're going to do next is we're going to take this thing and we're going to add an app bar, right? So we'll do the classic demo. We're going to drag and drop, right? The only time you'll see me do this. So watch. Okay, so I've dragged and dropped an app bar onto the application. And you'll see here that it went off and it created a little default button, right? It says example down there at the bottom. So let's click on this guy, and we're just going to turn this into a button. We're going to call it, we're going to give it an ID so I can refer to it. We're going to call him CMD open. There's icon here. Let's change it from this back arrow thing to an open file icon. And one of the cool things about the tool is, if you're wondering, well, what does an open file icon look like? The tool gives you a preview of what open file looks like as well. Right? So there's open file. We'll just change the caption over here to say open. Oops. We'll save this thing. Right? Then we can exit this and go back to Visual Studio, right? Because we're going to write some more code, right? But that's how we wound up creating just the UI elements of it. So you didn't have to know about all of this div data win control equals blah, blah, blah stuff, right? So you can go off and use a designer to go off and do the designery parts of your application as well. Okay, so we're going to come in here. I'm going to close this for a second. You won't need to do this in reality. I've got two versions of Visual Studio installed right now, so that's why I have to force a manual reload. In Visual Studio Express, if you just have one Visual Studio installed instead of two like me, right, you'll have this little pop-up that says, hey, the file's changed. Do you want to reload it? Right? So that's what I'm doing here. And you'll notice that this is the HTML that was added by Blend to the application. So if I was just going to go off and run this application now, don't have everything wired up, I'm just going to swipe down from the bottom or hit the Windows Z button, right, which is how we bring up the app bar inside of applications, you can see there's my open button there. Right? It doesn't do anything yet, but we're going to go back and let's wire up the code behind that to get it to open a file. So let's come back to default.js. And let's go do this guy. So I'm going to drop two pieces of code inside of here. The first piece of code says, hey, this is the app onloaded event. Right? So when my DOM is all ready, right, everything's been loaded, let's go off and find the CMD open element inside of the page, and let's bind its click event to a function called app.openfile. Right? And then app.openfile is defined here below. And what we're going to do is I'm going to do something that's just wrong. Right? How wrong is it? I'll hit F5 and I'll show you why it's wrong. What that code does is it tries to open a file. Right? Not asking the users. It's going to say, hey, there's this file. I want to go off and, oops, and open it. Let's go off and click on open. And if I were to do that, Visual Studio would get mad at me. Right now it's in the process of getting mad. It's just working itself up. So now it's really mad. Right? And what did it say? Right? If we kind of look in here, right, it says access is denied. Right? Because I tried to programmatically access the file system, but I didn't declare a capability that said, hey, I can access a user's document. Right? And that little blue link there, right, stop debugging and add documents library access capability to the manifest. Right? So in kind of this one click, you know, fix my application to get it to work thing, I can click on this. It's going to stop debugging. You'll notice there's a little star up here, so it's actually gone in and modified the manifest for me. The manifest is this XML thing that is used. And what it's done is it checked the document library's access option. Right, so this fixes the problem. Now, please don't do this if your application shouldn't actually do this. Right? Remember, you're declaring that you're going to have access to the user's documents. That means programmatic access to the documents. There's a few other things that you're going to need to do over and above this. It's not like I have access to all documents. Instead, my application says, hey, I'm a handler for file extension foo and file extension bar, and only those things are going to be things that you're allowed access to as well. Okay? So, but we don't really want to do this, so let's turn this off. All right, don't want that access. You'll notice that this internet client capability is on by default. Right, what that means is your application has the ability to talk to the internet, right? Outbound only, right? And that is fairly innocuous. It's no different than a web browser. But again, right, you might be wondering, you know, for certain kinds of applications, this might not be something that somebody wants, right? So again, minimum set of capabilities is what you're looking for. All right. So there's my manifest. I've got this guy and this thing. So let's get rid of this code here because I don't want that anymore, right? Because that's the bad code. Oops. Let's go. Here's just some little alias things that I have here to make it a little bit easier to read the code so it doesn't go that wide. Now, here's my new open file. What my new open file does is it opens this thing called a file open picker. Right? That's what this first line of code does up here. Let's see what a file open picker looks like. We already saw it when we first ran the application, but now that we've got things wired up in the app, let's kind of see it go all the way through. This displays this full screen UI that I see up here. Right? So the full screen UI, it comes up, right? These are all my directories and my documents, and there's the hello thing. I can click on that and it loads the file. Right? So that's what that code does. Let's go back and take a closer look at the code though, because there's a bunch of interesting things that I want to call out inside of that code for you. So you can see the first line says, hey, create me a file open picker object. The file open picker object was implemented by the Windows team. Right? So we wrote that all in native code, but we're in JavaScript. Right? So what I'm doing now is I'm calling a WinRT API, newing up an object, right, in WinRT, getting a reference back to it in JavaScript, and now on the next line of code, I'm manipulating things inside of this guy. Right? So I constructed the object. Now I'm just saying, hey, you know, the view modes, give me a list of files. Right? You can ask it to give you a list of pictures if that's what you want. Suggested start location is the documents library, right? So we've defined a bunch of kind of convenience things that will, you know, automatically point you at the user's documents library, for example. I'm going to say, hey, what files do I want to open? I want to filter for HTML files. And now I do this. This is where things get a little bit. The first bunch of lines of code were probably pretty straightforward, just setting some properties on objects. Down here is where our first example of async inside of Windows. So I'm going to go off and open the picker, and I'm going to do a pick async. So what that means is this code here, all of this code here executes, right? So boom, 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 boom. That's the end, right? So if I go here, this is the starting brace here, and this down here is the closing brace for that function. That function returns immediately, right? And what I've done inside of that function is I've passed it another function, right, inside of here. And what that function is it's the callback function. It says, hey, right, when you're done picking the file, call this function. It's kind of like an event handler. You kind of think about it as an event handler, right? When the user's done with this thing, fire this event, call this function. Right, so there's the function that says, hey, and you notice here it's going to pass me a file. It's a file object. Inside of the file object, I can pass it to another WinRT API, fileio.readtextasync. So this big clue is that any async function, right, always has async at the end of the name. Okay, so fileio.readtextasync of the file. I'm going to call that guy, and when it's done, right, call this other function. So I've got this other function nested inside. And you'll find that this looks really awkward and weird initially if you haven't programmed in this style of programming before, of passing functions to functions to functions. Right, but after a while, you'll think, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. If you've been doing a bunch of C# work with the new C# async stuff, we'll see some of that later on in this talk. You'll be familiar with that. That's just slightly different syntax for JavaScript here. So here's the callback function. When it's done reading the text, it's going to pass me the text, right, in this HTML variable. And then what I'll do is I'm going to call this function. We're going to talk about what that does in a minute, right? But there's the HTML, and then I go app.editor.setValue, the clean HTML that came back, right? So stuff from the file, pass it to some cleaning function, and then shove it into the app, okay? Now, why do I have this cleaning function? Why do I have this .toStaticHTML thing? As it turns out, what's happening is, inside of a web application, think about it this way. You'll notice that I'm calling Windows APIs from the JavaScript that's inside of this application. That's okay, because it was packaged, the JavaScript itself is packaged inside of the application, right? So, because it's packaged in the app, we will say this is trusted code. However, because this is just HTML and JavaScript, I could download random code from other places, right, and then shove it into my application's DOM. And that could be bad, especially if I didn't know where it came from, right? So by default, what happens is somewhere inside of app.editor.setValue, there's a div.innerHTML equals something, right? That's what happens. So what I want to make sure is, I want to make sure that the HTML was clean before it got in there, right? Because at some point, there's two things. There's the clean my HTML for me, but when I try to set it, I'm going to yell at you, throw an exception, right, if I'm not happy with the HTML that you're passing to me. Right? So just HTML is fine. Right? But HTML plus stuff that's considered unsafe, embedded script inside of it and other things will be disallowed. Right? And you'll get a runtime error if that happens. Okay, so that's what that little piece is all about. So that's essentially opening up a file, right? So that's a little bit of async. We've got, you know, our feet wet looking at that stuff. Now, let's, so we did that. We have the file picker. Now, there's something interesting here as well. So now that we've got this whole thing running, let's just run the application. Remember how we got that access denied, right, when I just tried to go off and open the file? Right? How did that work? How did the system know this? All right, so let's take a slightly closer look under the covers. So I'm going to go off and run another tool, which is procmon. Right, this is process monitor. And here's the filter, the default filter that I'm going to use in process monitor. So in process monitor, I'm going to say, go look at all accesses to things, right, objects inside of Windows, inside of wahost.exe, inside of this other thing called runtimebroker.exe, and only for files that are inside my document. So I'm just going to filter this thing down to a small set of things that I'm interested in. I'm going to say, okay, right, so process monitor is now going to go off and run, and he's going to passively monitor things. Nothing's happening yet. Let's go back to the application. Let's go open a file. Here's file open. There's hello. We'll say, okay, it's loaded the file. Let's go back to process monitor and see what happened. Now, there's a bunch of interesting things here. You'll notice that that file here, right, this is the file that was opened, was initially open in Runtime Broker. Runtime Broker is running in a separate process. Right? This is how we achieve isolation inside of MetroStyle apps, right, to preserve this confidence model that we want to have for customers. So anytime you have a file access is brokered by a separate process because we don't trust any of the code inside the process. Right? So we're going to run code in another process. Runtime Broker says, hey, I'm going to open the file. Is it possible? Right? He knows the permissions for the app. Right? He's part of the operating system. He's running at a higher level of privilege than your application is. He goes, this looks good. Right? Looks like he's allowed to go off and access this. So he opens the file. Then he marshals the file handle back to the process, back to Wahost. Right? Remember, that's the process that's running the code that you're running, right? Your JavaScript code. So he comes back in here, and you'll notice here, this is where the read file happens, right, inside of Wahost. That's your code doing the reading now. And then when we're all done, right, the close file happens both at the runtime broker level and at the Wahost level, right? So that's what happens, right? So this is how we maintain the integrity of your applications as well, right, by essentially having certain kind of privileged things always run inside of separate processes. But we're also doing the right thing in the sense we're marshaling the handle back across the process boundary rather than trying to remote all of the file access to another process. That'd be really slow and bad. Right? So we have this nice trade-off between safety and performance. Okay, so there's that. There's this whole save thing. I think I'll just kind of skip over that. You can imagine what save looks like, but you can read the document, right, for more details on how to go off and implement the save operation. What I want to show you next is, let's imagine that we had a new requirement. We want to be able to open zip files. It seems like a reasonable thing. Now, if you go on the internet, you can find, hey, there's all sorts of random JavaScript libraries for opening zip files. Right? So, I don't know if I really want to have some random JavaScript library opening a zip file. Instead, let's try and use an operating system component that ships with the OS. It already knows how to, I'm going to assume it's better tested, right, than random library on the internet. So, as it turns out, there's an API in .NET called ZipArchive. Right? ZipArchive allows me to go off and open zip files. But it's a .NET API, but I'm running my application in JavaScript. Right? So what do I have to do here? As it turns out, it's very simple for me to build what we call hybrid applications. In a hybrid application, what I can have is I can have some of my code written in JavaScript and HTML because it makes sense to write it in that, right? So we had all that existing code and all that other stuff, right? So, and I'm making an HTML editor, so it probably makes a lot of sense for that thing that I built so far to be written as JavaScript. But this zip thing, right? There's a .NET thing. Why don't I just go off and write a C# component and then call that thing from my JavaScript code? Right, so that's what we're going to do next. So let's come back here. There's my editor. I'll right-click here, and I say, hey, let's add a new project to my solution. Come down here to C# under MetroStyle, and you'll see that Windows Runtime Component is an option that I can pick. So I'm going to say, yeah, that's fine. Let's call him Zip. He'll go off and generate some starter code for me. And so that's what this looks like. Let's just delete the starter code because that's not, you know, all that interesting for us. And let's paste in a little bit of code. Okay? So here's the zip class. And you can see there's not much code here. There's 59 lines of code in this whole thing, right, with lots of comments and stuff. Here is the entry point to this guy. Right? He's called the read first file function. We're going to call this from the JavaScript side. Notice that he's public. And he's static, right? So I don't have to create an instance of this guy and just go off and call him directly. And then internally, I'm going to call the zip.readFirstFile internal function. You'll see that this pattern is going to happen quite a bit. Here's a question for you guys. How many of you guys have done some programming with the new C# feature, the async feature, inside of C# 4? Right? So there's a few of you guys, right? So this just makes it much easier for you to go off and write async code, right? Like the async patterns and things that we had before were just very tedious, right? Verbose, perhaps, right? There's a lot of stuff that you have to write in order to do that. This makes it much more straightforward for you to write async code inside of C#. So we saw that on the one hand, JavaScript did everything with these lambdas, right? These anonymous functions that were passed to functions. Inside of C#, what we have is we have the await keyword, which kind of constructs one of those things under the covers, right? Those are details. But what it does is says, hey, right here, what we're going to see await. I'm going to call this other thing copied a memory stream and says, I'm going to wait for this thing to come back. I return immediately, right? But then right afterwards, it kind of constructs like that function under the covers and then calls the next function, right? So again, I'm not blocking inside of this API. So I can build a fully asynchronous API in C# using these features that can interact with the async stuff inside of my JavaScript application as well. So this is the C# side. All we're doing is we're using the zip archive thing in here. We've got this trivial thing. I didn't want to write some UI to pick, right, which files. I'm just going to open the first one and assume that it's an HTML file. And I'm going to call this thing to copy the stream to a string. Right? Once I've copied the stream to a string, I return a string back to the caller. Right? So that's effectively what happens inside of this code. Let's switch back to the JavaScript thing here. And down here, actually, I won't need this anymore. Let's go R22. And here is, R21. Ah, I have to type right. Okay, there you go. What I have is the same thing. The only thing that's changed here is I look here at the file and I say, is it a zip file? If it's a zip file, what I'll do is I'll call my API, zip.zip.readfirstfile, right? That thing that I just showed you. Notice this funny capitalization thing, right? So back to, we're expecting the APIs to feel like they're a JavaScript API, so we do the right thing to convert that thing for you. We're going to call readFirstFile. Remember, that's an async function, so I have to pass it a function. It says, hey, when you're done, right, call me back, give me the HTML that you read, right? And then this is the same code that we've seen before, right, for setting the text editor. All right. One last thing I need to do. Remember, I've got two projects here. So in my editor, I need to add a reference to the zip project. Come up here. We'll click on zip. Say OK. And I'll hit F5 to run this guy. Come back here. Let's open. We'll click on open. You'll see that I can open. This is the zip file here, right? That's just a zip archive there. Click on that guy, say open, and he just opens, right? So that's pretty cool, right? I was able to go off and call some C# code, right, directly from my JavaScript application, right? So there's going to be things that, again, make sense, right? So maybe you have a whole library of C# code that does something interesting, right, that's specific to the problems that you're working on. Right, so you can still maintain and keep and leverage that existing code that you have, but maybe you want to have some HTML rendering UI that you use to render the results of this, right? Because maybe it makes more sense for you to render it that way. Right? So it's really powerful, this feature. And not only can you call C# code on the other side, you can call C++ code on the other side as well. Right? So I can go JavaScript to C++ if that's what I want to do as well. Right? So depending on the scenarios, this hybrid thing is a super powerful feature that we have inside of the product. Now, you say, but John, are you sure? You know, let's see this actually happening, right? Because a lot of times I don't trust some guy up on stage typing things really fast, right? So let's set some breakpoints to see what happens. I'm going to set a breakpoint here, and I'm going to set breakpoint here. So I'm setting a breakpoint before I call into C#, and I'm setting a breakpoint after I come back, right, from the C# code. But you might be saying, but John, wait a second, I want to see what happens in the C# code as well. Right, so let's see what we've got to do that. What I need to do here is let's just first start off by running this piece of code. So he's going to start running under the debugger. I'm going to switch back to my desktop. I'm going to open a second instance of Visual Studio. And I'm going to open the same project. And as he opens up, as we think a little bit, okay. So yeah, that's fine. We're going to come into the class 1.cs file. Scroll down here. I'm going to set a breakpoint right here. All right? So this is the first piece of code that's called on the C# side of the boundary. Right? So I've got a breakpoint sitting on the JavaScript side of the boundary, a breakpoint sitting on the C#, the very first part of the C# code, and I've got another breakpoint when I come back out of this. Right? So I've got three breakpoints kind of linearly set in a row there. And what I'm going to do here, remember my app's already running. So I'm going to go up here and say, hey, let's go to debug. Let's attach to the process. And there's wahost.exe. And if you look a little bit here, you can see that this wahost.exe is running the editor instance that we have already. All right, so I'm going to say, let's go attach to that process. Okay, and I attach my managed debugger to that process. Now I can come back to the app now, and let's go open the file again. So click on open. There's a zip file. Click on that. Now I'm going in there. So now I'm at that first breakpoint, right, inside of the JavaScript code. If I hit F5 now, I'm now on the other Visual Studio instance, right, that's bound to the same process, but I'm inside of the C# code. And now here I can just step into this code just like I would otherwise, right? So I'm going to go off, you know, our count is great, right? So I can inspect variables. You know, the kind of essentially the full kind of debugging experience that we're used to having inside of Visual Studio is available for you, even in these hybrid scenarios. Right? So we do that. We'll hit F5. Now we're at the other side of this, right? We're back in the JavaScript debugger, where we're sitting inside of here, right? You can look at the HTML if you want, right? That's the stuff that's there. Hit F5, and we're back inside of the application, right? So we can definitely go off and debug these things across these boundaries as well. Okay. Now let's show you a couple other interesting things about debugging. Let's get rid of these breakpoints first in this version of the app. Has anyone found the bug in the app? There's a bug in the app, right? You guys are looking carefully, right? There's a bug in here. So let's go off and trigger the bug. Right. We'll come here. We'll click on open. And then we'll click on cancel. So nobody would ever click on cancel, right? And then boom, right? The thing blows up. Right? Because I wasn't checking the return value. Right? It's a pretty common thing. There's a bug. When it crashes, it does what we would expect, right? It says, you know, there's a little pop-up thing, right? I'm breaking on an exception. Let's break. Right? You can see I have I have my call stack sitting there, right? That says where I am. So certainly, you know, that's the live debugging experience that we would expect to have. Now imagine instead of someone clicking cancel while they were running it under the debugger, instead you had, you know, some tester had your application. They're running it on their machine. They clicked on cancel. What does that look like? So let's come back. Remember, you had some dialog box that would pop up and stuff, right? Your user would have no idea what to do with that, right? But let's go back to our start screen. Let's go to the end. And see that editor is here, right, as my application. So let's click on that. We're going to run the same application now, but I'm not running it inside of Visual Studio. I'm running it as if I were just a regular user. Let's bring Windows Z. There's open. Click on cancel. And then what we're going to look at is the crash experience. That's what the crash experience looks like. When an application crashes, you just go back to the start screen, right? No dialog box that is unactionable, right? You know, that pops up. Just, hey, poof, it's gone. But then how does your tester tell you what happened? Well, I clicked on something, something happened. That's great, right? But, you know, where in the code does that really kind of correspond to? All right, so let's take a look at what we've done for you here. So here's this cool feature. You guys, if you're paying attention in the keynote, there was this cool feature, right, that they showed you in the keynote, which was this thing, right? You know, throw the mouse to this corner and right-click, right? And then we bring up Event Viewer straight from here. Did not know that. Let's come here to Applications and Services Logs. Under Microsoft, Windows, App Host, Admin, and lo and behold, I have some stuff here. Let's just copy this goo out of here into something bigger, right? So we can look at it. It said, app crashed with an unhandled JavaScript exception, right? Here, actually, let's put this in a word wrapping thing. There, right? And there's like some source and line number. There's a stack trace that tells me what file it was in, right? It's not the most formatted, beautiful thing in the world, right? But at least it's actionable, right? It tells you where in the source that this thing crashed, right? So that you can take this crash report and do something with it. This is what it looks like for JavaScript. A little later, what we'll do is we'll take a look at what this could look like for a C++ crash as well, right, towards the end of the talk, okay? Right? It turns out it's richer for that. Cool. All right. So, so I'll show you that. Great. So the last thing I want to show you, remember at the very end of the, when I showed you the app the first time around, I had this search experience as well. All right, so, hey, let's add some incremental search and some stuff. That's kind of cool, right? That's adding more of the Metro-style UI to the application. How would I figure out how to do that? As it turns out, there's some cool stuff inside of Visual Studio that's going to help you as well. So I hate when there's two instances. I get confused. So we'll close one of them. Come back to this guy. If you go to the help menu, there's this wonderful option, samples. All right, so I can click on samples. Let's hope the internet works. If it doesn't, then I'll show you what happens when the internet doesn't work. Maybe the internet's not working. Oh, maybe? I'm hopeful. Yay! Okay, the internet works. All right, it's just kind of slow. All right, so I can search online samples straight from this dialog box. And I say, hey, let's go look for the search contract. All right, so there's a search contract, search app contract sample. And you notice that there's different versions for different languages. Let's click on the one here for JavaScript. And you'll notice that it's going to go here. Let's put it in temp, right? And it's going to go off and create a solution locally for me and copy all the files. That's pretty awesome, right? So it goes, grabs a thing, downloads it, drops it into Visual Studio, right? Opens it up. I've got it working. It even shows me the doc page, right? Now I'm running this guy. And look, right? Here's the SDK sample. Anyone here looked at our SDK samples yet? Yeah, a couple of you guys. Yeah. So our SDK samples, we spent a lot of time in this release working on the SDK samples. We made it so that there's 350-ish samples that we have in the SDK that were written by the product teams. They all look very consistent, right? The structure of them is consistent, not like some random thing that some dude thought would be great. There's a template so that, you know, we allow you to focus in on the code that you care about very, very quickly rather than having to comprehend somebody's random application that they built to show off their features. All right, so it's very consistent. We have them in all the languages as well. So on a given feature, you'll see, as we saw here, right, there was a C++ sample, there was a C# sample, as well as a JavaScript sample for doing all of these things. So the thing that we were actually interested in was this suggestions from open search thing. So you can actually go off and run this thing live. I can bring up the charms bar right by hitting Windows C here, click on search, and I can start typing, you know, hello world, right? This thing doesn't actually pull anything from anywhere, right? It's a sample, so it's completely self-contained. But you'll notice that if we look over here at the green text right there, it says suggestions provided for query. So as I was typing, right, stuff was showing up over there in the green green thing. If you don't believe me, we can type some more stuff. Here, let's go back. Right? So you can see that as I'm typing, you know, stuff just shows up there. Right? So this contains the code that I want. Right? As I'm typing stuff, there's some search suggestion thing, right? And we can go off and we can literally pull the code straight out of this this application. So let's go look at the code. Let's bring up Solution Explorer. And you'll see that all the samples here have a very standard thing. Remember it was number 5, right, for open search, right, on the options list. And so scenario 5 contains the code, right, for that option that I selected. And all the samples behave very similarly. And this is the code that's necessary for you to do that. We won't go through all of this code in here. You can read this, you know, kind of at your leisure. The kind of key interesting point here is that what it does is it goes off and does this XML HTTP request here. This winjs.xhr thing does is it goes off, and what we're going to change the sample to do is go to the Wikipedia search provider, right? So Wikipedia already provides search suggestions using the Open Search API. Right, which is just a JSON file that gets, you know, sent back to us, right? And it's a very RESTful style API that we use to call it. Sends us back these search suggestions, and I can use it to populate stuff inside of it. So this is the code that I need to steal from this application. And what we're going to do is we're just going to come back in here, come up there, and inside of the onloaded event, I'm going to go off and integrate that code. This is exactly the same code you can check my homework later, that we had in here, right? So the search pane, the same stuff that we had before, right? I just copied and pasted it into the application. I need to add this XHR object, right? So I need to go put this guy up there as well. And this guy here is the URL for Wikipedia, right? So the suggestion URLs, there's just this file that it normally pulls out, but I can turn it into this request to the actual Wikipedia search provider. So I'm going to paste that guy in there. And I'm going to uncomment this code here, which says, hey, you know, we're going to encode the query text that the user has sent to us, and we're going to tack it onto the end of the suggestion URL. Right? So call Wikipedia, look for win or whatever the user has typed so far, and give me search suggestions coming back in JSON. And then finally, I need one more little hunk of code here. And this is the unactivated thing. So the interesting thing here is when your application is activated, this event or this function is called. And when the function is called, it tells you, hey, this was why you were activated. Right? And when it's launched, the user clicked on the tile. Right? So your application launches, and you can do some initialization. Down there, you can see a little bit further below that what we have is you can be launched for search. Right? So what happened there is the user typed something in the search pane and hit enter. Right? So when they hit enter, it's going to launch your application. It says, hey, I'm launched for search. Now go off and download file. Right? So that's all that code does inside of there. Now, if we go off and run this application now, see the last little bit coming through. We see, oh, there's an access denied. Now, kind of like that other time when we had the access denied for the file thing, this is another similar security thing. What happens here is I need to declare that my app needs to integrate with the search contract. Right? So that manifest that we were talking about, that's read by the system when your app loads. And it says, hey, I need to wire this guy up to the search thing. Right? And make sure that he's available for activation as well. Right? So that's the thing that we're missing, and that's what's responsible for this dialog box. Unfortunately, we don't have the awesome blue text that says fix this on this dialog box. But it's really straightforward for me to go back into that file. There's my AppX manifest. Let's go to declarations now. I'm going to select one. The one I want is search. I'm going to add it to my manifest. Defaults are fine in this case here. Now I can rerun the application. Comes up there. Oops. Nope. Wrong part of the demo. Click on search. Right, go type Windows, and we can see the same things, right? So there's my incremental search stuff coming back. I hit enter, right? That other code, remember the search I'm unactivated is now being called, right? I'm being activated for search. That thing's going off to Wikipedia, and if the internet's fast, it's going to go off and download the Windows 8 article just like we saw before and shove it into the HTML editor thing on the side, right? So that's what that does, right? That was very straightforward. That was literally the code straight out of the sample, right? And we saw how we can find the samples. There's a lot of samples up there for you to go off and look at. So you can figure out for yourself later on how you can go off and integrate additional features into your application. Okay? Cool. Yeah, this will come back someday, but let's not wait forever. Okay, so there's that. Last little thing I want to show you before we're done is I want to talk a little bit more about this. What happens? So we've got our app. We've built it. We've deployed it. We've put it on the store. Customers downloaded it. They're playing with it. It crashes. Now what? Right? In a lot of cases, how many people here have ever done a post-mortem debug before? One, two, wow, you guys are so much more awesome than the guys in the U.S., right? So one guy in the U.S. did that, but there's like at least six or seven of you guys here, right? So postmortem debugging is just one of these things that's unusual, let's call it, for most developers, right, in this crowd. What it means is there's a file that's collected on the user's machine, a dump file. And that dump file contains information like a copy of the stacks that were there when the application crashed, right? Copies that thing, sends it up into the sky, right? We're going to make those crash dumps available to you guys as, you know, as registered developers for your application only, right? And you can take a look inside those dumps and then at least have some hope of trying to figure out what happened. Keep in mind, this is only stack information, right? And we also kind of scrub and sanitize some of this stuff as well. But no heap information, right? So you don't get a dump. Like, these are relatively small files, right? 100-odd K. Typically is the size of one of these. So let's create one, and let's take a look at how one of these would work. So let's go off and let's do something. Here's my gratuitous C++ example, right? Let's go off and create a C++ app. We'll call them crash app. As we think, we do some thinking. It's a XAML application, as it turns out, right? So let's go off and bring up mainpage.xaml. And what we'll do is, you know, the canonical demo, right? I'm going to drop a button on here. Let's bring up my toolbar. Let's go grab a button. We'll drop them down there. double click on that, and I'll go write some crappy code, right? So I'll double click on that, and we'll write some crappy code. Computer? There you go. All right. So I don't know. Here's some crappy code, right? Oops. Right? So everyone knows what that code's going to do, right? Come on. Let's go. Let's go build. Oh. Am I running already? What's going on? Am I building? Oh, I'm building. Oh, yeah. I forgot. It's C++. It takes a few seconds. Okay, there we go. I'm so used to this, you know, hit F5 and things just happen. Okay, there we go. The app's running. There's my button. Now, what I've done ahead of time is I've prepped my machine. Now, this is an awesome thing that you guys should all know about. It's called the local dumps feature. Here's a reg file. So if you go off and run this reg file, it's going to enable local dump collection on your machine. What that means is anytime something crashes on your machine, right, it's going to write a file to a place where I know about, right, which in this case is going to be C:\temp directory. Okay? And that's where we're going to go off and look for that. Prep my machine for that already. Come back to this thing here. Click on button. Oops. Oh, yeah, I forgot. I'm running on a debugger, right? So, yeah, this is the experience we would expect under the debugger, right? We can see our stack trace there. Memorize that. There's going to be a test later. Okay, so there's my trace. Now, I've got Crash App. He also sits over here, right? So I'm going to run it not under the debugger. Run it straight off of the start screen. We're going to click on this guy here. Now, he pauses a little bit before we go back to the screen. If I go back to my desktop, I can go look in the temp directory. I can see there's my crash, right? So there's crashapp.exe, blah, 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 blah. Timestamp is like now, right? So I can double-click on that to open them up inside of a fresh instance of Visual Studio. And there's this thing over here, debug with native only. Right, so I'm going to click on that. What Visual Studio does now is it takes that dump file, creates a process, loads that dump file into there, and sets the IP to where it was. Right, so it recreates as much of the process as it can. As you might imagine, there's no heap or anything else there, right? So you're somewhat limited, but hopefully if you've got your symbols in the right place and the other stuff, you're going to have a meaningful stack trace like you have right there. Right? So you're going to have a similar experience, right, when you go off and publish your apps. So there's a bunch of things that you guys need to do. You need to manage your symbols properly. You need to put them in the right place and some other things, right? You could have 10 versions of your app out there, right? You're going to be getting crashes from 10 different versions of your app now, right? So you have to have a process in place for you to go off and manage your symbol files. There's a great book called Advanced Windows Debugging, which is fantastic. It's a whole chapter on how do you manage your symbol files. Right, so again, you know, if you're building apps, especially native apps for this world, right, this is a smart thing for you to do to put in a good process for that, so that you have the capability of debugging these things when you get the inevitable crash dumps that show up. Okay, so that's what the crash experience looks like there. Okay, so wrapping things up, let's go back to the slides so you can kind of say, oh, where am I? I'm back here. Run that guy again. So we saw a bunch of things, right, inside of this talk, right? We started with what we knew, right, some HTML and CSS. We took stuff that we knew, which was that JavaScript library, the CodeMirror library, our syntax coloring editor, patched that together, got that up and running, right, very, very quickly. We next extended this thing by saying, hey, you know, let's integrate it in with the operating system, right? So we had some Metro-style UI, we had the app bar, we added some buttons, added the ability to access a user's file system. We next, what do? We said, hey, we need to open zip files as well, right? So we created a C# component, turned it into a hybrid application. So I had some code in JavaScript, some code in C#. Had this component, called it. We saw some fun debugging stuff, right? So I could see, you know, how I could go back and debug both things as well. Got that thing to work. We saw some of the samples that we had, right? So, you know, kind of some of the questions that we have about how do I integrate? Well, we took code straight out of a sample to do the search contract integration. We copied and pasted it into our application, tweaked a couple of things, and got it to work, right? So it's very, very quick for you if you start poking around at the samples, right, to get up to speed fast, right, building applications on this platform. And then finally, we saw some of the features that we had to help you build higher quality applications. What happens when things crash? How do I look for information that's going to help me debug and root cause what happened inside of my application crash? So that's what we got there. So that's really what we have inside of, you know, the Metro-style SDK. Oh, yeah, there's a bunch of other things. Here's some other talks. Remember that PDF file, right? 50 pages, lots of information, right? If you can absolutely go back and replicate everything that we saw here today by walking through that kind of tutorial style when you get a chance. So remember, you know, we need apps. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing the kind of apps that you guys go off and create. Thanks for coming here. I'm not going to keep you from lunch anymore, but feel free to come up and ask any questions after we're done. Okay? Thank you.